This hour, we'll be hearing excerpts from the Intelligence Squared U.S. debate on the proposition Hollywood has fueled anti-Americanism abroad. The live event took place at Asia Society in New York City on the evening of December 13, 2006, and it was sponsored by the Rosenkranz Foundation. The event was moderated by journalist and writer Bernard Weinraub. Speaking in favor of the motion were Roger Kimball, who's co-editor and co-publisher of New Criterion magazine, Joshua Moravchik, resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute for Public Policy Research, and Biola University law professor James Herson. Against the motion were UCLA professor Richard Walter, Robin Brunk, the executive director of the Creative Coalition, and film producer and director Robert Greenwald. Now, a few words about the format. Each debate consists of an 8-minute opening speech from each panelist, followed by a discussion of questions raised by the audience. The evening concludes with short summary statements from both sides. The audience was polled on the motion, Hollywood has fueled anti-Americanism abroad, before and after the event. The entry poll gauged the live audience as leaning just slightly to the side of the proposers, voting 40% in favor, and a close 35% against, 25% were undecided. We'll begin by listening to excerpts of the opening speeches. Here is the proposer of the resolution, Roger Kimball.
Good evening. I'd like to thank Mr. Weinraub and Bob Rosenkranz, Dana, and all the IQ2 staff for organizing this event and keeping alive the tradition of civil discourse and debate in New York. It's a tradition that has unfortunately fallen out of favor in recent years. Now, we all know that Hollywood, in its current incarnation, boasts a large quotient of anti-Americanism. The names Matt Damon, George Clooney, Alec Baldwin, Barbara Streisand, Michael Moore, Susan Sarandon, the list goes on and on. We also know that anti-Americanism is alive and well in the world today, alas. Now, what is the connection? I want to be clear about what the resolution before us is, a resolution, by the way, that I hope you will support. It is that Hollywood has fueled anti-Americanism abroad. This is where it gets tricky. This is not a referendum about the Bush administration, the war in Iraq, or any evils, real or supposed, of American society. It is a resolution about the effect of Hollywood movies and the Hollywood mindset on this phenomenon of anti-Americanism abroad. Anti-Americanism abroad would exist without Hollywood, just as cancer would exist without cigarette smoke, but Hollywood tends to make the malignancy worse. And it does this, I think, in two ways. One way is what we might call cultural anti-Americanism. By making so many trashy, vacuous movies, Hollywood fosters a view of American life that is really at odds with the reality of American society. It shows this society to be largely sex-obsessed, violence-obsessed, a society shot through with cynicism about its founding institutions, and by and large portrays a decadent society in love with nihilism. That's one way in which Hollywood fuels anti-Americanism abroad, by portraying America as a society that has lost its soul. Another way, and perhaps a more virulent way, a more political way, is the way Hollywood, by attacking those institutions of American life, shows America to be a bankrupt, corrupt, venal, savage, mercenary society. When was the last time you saw the President of the United States in a movie portrayed in a favorable light, or the military? It's very rare that this happens. Hollywood has fueled anti-Americanism abroad to such an extent that, for example, German school teachers show Bowling for Columbine by Michael Moore as an accurate portrayal of American society. One thinks, for example, of the movie Syriana, which blends incomprehensibility with anti-American animus to an extraordinary extent. Charles Krauthammer said that this movie could have been scripted by Osama bin Laden, And I believe that the general spirit of Hollywood today actively fuels anti-Americanism abroad, and I hope that you will support that motion. Thank you.
Okay, against, we have Richard Walter.
Thank you. You hear it all the time. Hollywood films are corrosive, destructive, decaying. You hear it all the time. You hear it from our noble opponents here, and you hear it in right-wing talk radio shows. I guess that's a redundancy if ever there was one. I just wonder if it worries our friends even just a little bit to find themselves in lockstep agreement with Osama bin Laden. The fact of the matter is there are a lot of bad movies out there. There's also a lot of bad paintings, a lot of bad sculpture. You know, most art sucks, excuse me. But with film, because it's contemporary, even more so in television, with television, we don't have the time to do the culling and the selecting you find where the bad stuff kind of falls away, it drops away. People like to look back at the 40s and the 30s and say, why don't they make great films like they did back then? The fact is, they made a lot of lousy movies back then as well. I think in 2060, they'll be saying, why don't they make great films like they did back there at the beginning of the new millennium? We hear about sex and violence in films as if this was invented by Hollywood. The fact is, dramatic narrative has always been brutal, always been ugly, always been bloody and sexual. Oedipus Rex, he kills his father. You know what he does to his mother. He pokes his eyes out with jagged, rusty spikes. Medea murders her own children in a jealous rage against her philandering and faithless husband, Jason. This was not invented by 11 Jews at Paramount Studios a couple of weeks ago, last Thursday. This is the way dramatic expression operates. It's all about conflict, and, you know, nobody wants to see the village of the happy, nice people. But I must tell you, I've traveled all around the world. I'm privileged to travel all around the world and to lecture on screenwriting issues and talk to film development corporations, and we are very much loved all around the world. I had the privilege of teaching master classes last spring in Paris and London, and imagine my good fortune that I could stand in front of you and actually truthfully pronounce that sentence to you. And in the lobby of the Conservatoire in Paris, there are 24 posters of movies all around the room, and 21 of the movies our Hollywood movies, our American films, only 3 of them were French films. The truth is, we are loved all around the world for our film. The films show that we're an open society. Do we want to go back, as Jim suggests in a piece that I read, to the good old days when everybody was white and women knew their place? I don't think so. Thank you very, very much.
Speaking in favor of the motion, Joshua Moravcik focused his argument on specific Hollywood films that have shown America in a bad light. He began with Dr. Strangelove.
The thesis of that movie was that the American nuclear arms and American armament in general was not driven by any real danger to our country, but was rather driven by the militarism, chauvinism, paranoia of American officials, even with some bizarre root or connection in Nazi Germany. And this film, in fact, symbolized a thesis about the Cold War and America's role in it that was believed by many Americans, but even more by foreigners, and that was propagated again and again by Hollywood films, namely that the two parties to the Cold War were equally guilty, equally afraid of one another. They were like two scorpions in a bottle. Still worse than that kind of a moral equivalence were people who that said, in fact, we were the bad guys, and the good guys in the Cold War were the Uncle Joe Stalin and the Soviet Union and his heirs. The emblematic figure of this view of the world was Lillian Hellman, who was a communist but pretended not to be, and who, in fact, even once wrote a film called Song of Russia. And the film Song of Russia, Mr. Walter, was exactly a film portraying a village of the happy, nice people, except this village of the happy, nice people was a collective farm, which in fact, in reality, was a form of death-dealing slave labor, but brought to the screen in Hollywood as a kind of Brady Bunch lifestyle of speaking Russian. If you watch the thriller genre in recent years, you see that there's a kind of set pattern that reappears again and again and again. That is, well, as you go along in the film and you find out who is the real evil force at the inner sanctum behind the bad guys in the film, it is invariably the CIA or the Pentagon, the president, some aid to the president, or American multinational corporations. The best representation of that is by the remake of The Manchurian Candidate. Manchurian Candidate was a film in the 50s which showed someone being manipulated and brainwashed and used for diabolical purposes by the government of Communist China, of Mao Zedong. In the 21st century version of The Manchurian Candidate, it's no more Mao Zedong, it's some multinational corporation vaguely reminiscent of Halliburton or the Carlyle Group. So here we have a new sensibility, right? That is, on the one hand, we have this evil Halliburton, Carlyle, whatever, and clearly this is supposed to be more horrible to us now in our new modern sensibility than the government of China, of Mao Zedong.
Josh, it's time.
My closing had to do with the clown prince of anti-Americanism, Michael Moore, but I'll save it for the question period.
I'm Robert Siegel, and we've been listening to excerpts of an Intelligence Squared U.S. debate. You can download this program and hear the complete debate at our website, npr.org/intelligencesquared. The next speaker in this debate is Robin Bronk, speaking against the motion, Hollywood has fueled anti-Americanism abroad.
Support the contention. Well, if you didn't like Fahrenheit 9/11, what about Flight 92 and the spate of extremely patriotic movies that have recently come out? Men of Honor, 13 Days, Saving Private Ryan, Patriot. Well, of course Hollywood releases lots of different kinds of films. But where has any reputable study anywhere found a direct tie between the kinds of films being produced at a given moment and a rise in anti-American sentiment around the world? In fact, the opposite appears true. Hollywood is frequently what appeals to foreigners about America, even those who detest our foreign policy. It's called show business. Hollywood studios are owned by global multinational conglomerates whose goal is to maximize their shareholder value. They do this by trying to produce a product that will appeal to the widest possible audience. To do this, they must do their respective best to appeal to the most broad marketplace, here and abroad. And unless you believe that Hollywood is run by a conspiracy, then all Hollywood is doing is reflecting the values of the people to whom it seeks to appeal. Now, if you would argue that this somehow increases the incidence of anti-Americanism, then what you're really arguing is that American values and the values of the global marketplace are the cause of anti-Americanism. And if that's the case, and I would contend that it's not, then you're really objecting both to capitalism itself and to the way that Americans like to think of themselves as citizens and consumers. That sounds kind of anti-American to me. And moreover, it sounds like you're shooting the messenger. In America Against the World, How We Are Different and Why We Are Disliked, based on 91,000 interviews conducted in 50 nations from 2002 to 2005 by the Pew Research Center, the authors write that while the first hints that the world was becoming troubled by America came soon after the election of George W. Bush, and that whatever global goodwill the United States had in the wake of the September 11th attacks appears to have quickly dissipated after the Iraq invasion, favorable opinions had more than slipped. They had plummeted. And it's grown worse since May when that was published. The most recent Pew findings show that favorable opinions of the U.S. have gone from 83% in 2000 to 56% in 2006. In Britain, 78 to 37. In Germany, and 62 to 39 in France. When one looks at the results of these surveys, you see tremendous international opposition to the war in Iraq and America's policies on global warming. If you speak with foreign leaders, you hear genuine concern about specific aspects of U.S. foreign policy, the refusal to agree with the Kyoto Treaty on global warming, the withdrawal from the International Criminal Court, the war in Iraq, difficulty getting visas to visit the United States. Perhaps I'm looking at the wrong polls or talking with the wrong foreigners, but I've yet to hear anyone mention Everybody Loves Raymond reruns as the fuel feeding the anti-American fire raging across so much of the globe. And that's leading.
James Herson's opening statement was mostly about the impression that America's movies and pop culture have made on foreign audiences.
When considering this motion and whether you're going to support it, I mean, the real question is whether the America that you see in the generic Hollywood that constitutes television shows and movies and music is the same America that we all live in and work in. Now, Richard Walter has traveled the world, and he said he was privileged to do so, but there's lots of people that have not, and they've never come here, and they've never met you. And so their only impression is the export of the pop culture by the Hollywood community. Once upon a time, as Richard Walter alluded to, talking about the 30s and 40s in Hollywood, there's a nickname for this. It's called the Golden Age. It's for a reason, because iconic images were sent around the world, images of Henry Fonda, images of Clark Gable, images of John Wayne. And the world fell in love with America, and they fell in love with those Hollywood images. And there was a set of values. There was optimism, and there was courage. And there was an unshakable belief in freedom, an unshakable belief in fairness. Since the 1960s, what people see around the world is an America of extreme violence, of rampant crime, of unapologetic narcissism, of licentious exhibitionism and self-loathing. And this is misshapen. It's distorted. It's a place where even Tony Soprano would run to his therapist. And the export of this pop culture has increased. Multiplexes were built in Europe, and the exports have gone up to a level where 40 to 50% of film box office is on foreign shores. That includes Syriana and Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9/11, which has been very popular in the Afghan caves. America's recent film exports, though, took the idea of artistic license in relation to violent scenes to a whole new level. We have a whole new genre of films that are doing big box office abroad, and they deal with nothing but sadistic, senseless, sickening torture. I'm talking about films like Hostel, which did $33 million abroad. The Saw series, there's three of them. They did $160 million abroad. These films, Hostel's plot is a group of young people who are traveling, who are taken prisoner by an organization that allows businessmen to torture and kill for entertainment. There's no plot. And they lead our neighbors abroad to believe that America is deviant and despicable and violent. It's no wonder that we have heard this nickname of Israel as Little Satan by some of the people we're fighting against, and they call us the Great Satan. As a matter of fact, Robin referred to studies. This isn't a poll, but it certainly is an event when, right after 9/11, 1 month later, angry mobs went to the local cinemas and burnt down five of them that contained American films. I guess they gave it a thumbs down. The other aspect of Hollywood that's very disturbing is the way representatives of free enterprise are depicted. You know, I would expect that in a town that writes scripts that every once in a while we'd see a corporate executive as a villain. But it's almost always that way. Oliver Stone made Wall Street, named his main character Gecko, and he extolled the virtues of greed. in Syriana.
Robert Greenwald argued in his opening statement against the proposition Hollywood has fueled anti-Americanism abroad that American foreign policy has the single greatest effect on the perception of the country overseas.
Does Josh really think that the war that he advocated for has less of an effect on people than watching a movie? Or that if we follow his lead and go to war with Iran, that that will in any way do anything but continue to destroy the country that we love, the country that Oliver Stone loves, the country that Michael Moore loves, the people in the community in Los Angeles who love, we may disagree with them, but the notion that we say they hate America is one I personally find disgusting. Let me go back to 9/11 for a minute. We all remember, I was not in New York, many of you were here, the terrible time, the tragedy, and then this amazing outpouring around the world. This time was truly something to behold. We know it from the information, we know it from the news sources. People, I'm sure, here have individual stories when you would call somebody from another country and what they would say and how they would reach out to us. And then that changed, right? After the Iraq War, a big drop, right? Turkey went from 52% of the country supporting us to 12%. Britain, our ally, 83 to 56%. And Jordan from 20 to 1% had supported us, and now, over a period of years, we're no longer. Well, I'm absolutely sure that the reason for that was Ocean's 11. That's exactly the reason. Or maybe it was Shrek. Now, I think maybe it was Shrek that caused that terrible fall off to happen. That really would explain the statistical drop, right? I mean, it makes perfect sense. This was a war of choice that our country went into. And we think Hollywood is in any way causing the rise of un-Americanism? It's, in many ways, defies logic and defies reason. So I urge all of you to vote your rational selves, not to vote a Hollywood fantasy scriptwriter who might make up a notion that, yes, some silly movie was going to affect people all over the world rather than what's going on today. Thank you.
Okay, I want to thank everybody on my right and left. And we're now ready to begin the Q&A portion of the program, and I'll call on the questioners. I have one question. As the moderator, I have the right to at least one question, but I have one. And I have a question for one of the people on my right. The five biggest films overseas, abroad, in the last 20 years, maybe longer, 25 years, are Titanic, Star Wars Episode I, E.T., Pirates of the Caribbean, and Lord of the Rings. None of these, obviously, are political. None of these have a point of view that could be construed as anti-American. How do you construe that, given the argument of films causing anti-Americanism?
I'd be glad to respond to that.
Joshua Moravchik.
The proposition here is not that all films are anti-American, but the fact is that one that you didn't mention that may not have been among the five biggest sellers, but that's tremendously influential in Europe, is Michael Moore. Michael Moore, at one given moment, was the author of three books out of the top six on the bestseller list in Germany, number one, two, and six. These books that were based repeat the themes of his movies, which I'd laughed when I heard Robert Greenwald say that he loves his country. Let me give you a sample of Michael Moore. Americans are possibly the dumbest people on the planet, enthralled to conniving, thieving, smug We Americans suffer from an enforced ignorance. We don't know about anything that's happening outside our country. Our stupidity is embarrassing. And Michael Moore has achieved the stature of a cult figure in Germany and immense popularity. I think Germany is probably the country where he's most popular, but all around Europe, he enjoys a popularity near that dimension. And why? Because he is seen as the American voice for hating America and for everything that's wrong and disgusting, stupid and idiotic in our country. So he says, I agree with the National Rifle Association when they say guns don't kill people, people kill people. Except I would alter that to say guns don't kill people, Americans kill people. And we are the only country that does this. And we do it on a personal level in our neighborhoods and within our families and schools, and we do it on a global level. Close quote. This is a man who berates us for ignorance, who apparently has never heard of Iraq, Palestine, Bosnia, Somalia, Congo, Rwanda, Russia, Chechnya, etc. So it may well be that the most popular films in America and abroad that are produced by Hollywood are films that are not political at all. But there are plenty of films that are political, and those go in one direction. And contrary to Mr. Greenwald, who says what Hollywood does is fiction, Michael Moore presents himself as doing fact, as presenting documentaries. And he even has a team of lawyers and fact checkers and threatens publicly, repeatedly, to sue anyone who dares to challenge or contradict or impugn him. So... Okay. I hope he and his lawyers are listening. I'm ready.
Okay, let me just, let's start with, let's start with the questions. Yes, miss.
Thank you. I have a question for those against the motion. And I want to put a finer point on the question itself and the way you've addressed it. One, the question isn't whether Hollywood was responsible for the anti-Americanism abroad. The question is whether it has fueled that anti-Americanism. And we're seeing a lot of movies coming out of Hollywood that use stereotypes. It used to be Russians and communists during the Cold War. Now we have almost cartoon-like Arabs and Muslims in the movies. Do the panelists against the motion feel that that adds to anti-Americanism abroad generally?
Richard Walter.
I'll speak to that. I think, I don't believe that that fuels anti-Americanism. Movies like Michael Moore's movies, I think Michael Moore is an overfed, underloved narcissist. I'm not a fan. But when people abroad look at a movie like that, what they see about America is that America is a place where people can be critical of their own nation. I try to cut down on some of my activities, but I could, as a Jew and as an American, I could not turn down the Fulbright Commission when they asked me to sponsor an Egyptian scholar. I had to reach out to my Arab Muslim brother, particularly at this time, don't you think? And what he loved about America was its ability to be critical of the administration. He said if people spoke that way of Mubarak, they would be disappeared off the street. American films, they extol essentially the American dream. And what is the American dream? The American dream is a certain materialism, to be sure. Nothing wrong with that. People who can't get the basic material, food, clothing, shelter for themselves, for their children, they will listen to any tyrant, any dictator. We've seen throughout history, and especially the last 100 years, testifying to the truth of that proposition. So certain materialism is okay, and people across the world, they just love what they see. They love the material stuff that they see in Hollywood films. But more to the point, Hollywood films extol the notion of the American dream. And what is the American dream? It's the notion that if you're willing to work hard, if you're willing to get educated, in this country you can do anything. You can move up from your lowly station and achieve anything if you're just willing to, again, get educated and work real hard. Now, people will tell you on both sides that that's a hoax. That's kind of like the lottery designed to let people imagine that they can do things that they can't. But I must tell you, from my perch at UCLA and in Hollywood, I see people break through every day. You'll hear that it's about connections, who you know. It's bunk. I know really well-connected people who cannot get arrested in Hollywood, and I see absolute fresh faces break through every day. Like it, don't like it. There's so many myths, so many hoaxes about Hollywood. One of the biggest among them is that it is not a meritocracy. It's all about connections. The fact is that Hollywood is a remarkably democratic place and truly a meritocracy. People succeed on the basis of their talent, on the basis of their ingenuity and their discipline. It's a great credit to this nation. I think it's the greatest industry that we have.
One sentence in reply. We
Joshua Moravchik.
Richard, it may be perfectly true that in some authoritarian countries, if they see a film, an American film, that is viciously hostile to the American government, they say, oh, in America they have free speech. I wish I did too. That point is valid. But I was talking about Europe. And they have just as much free speech in Europe and France and UK as we have here. And when those audiences eat up what Michael Moore is offering, they're not sitting there saying, oh, isn't this wonderful? There's free speech in the United States.
Joshua.
Okay, I'm sorry, go on.
These are excerpts from a live debate on the proposition Hollywood has fueled anti-Americanism abroad. You can listen to the event in its entirety on our website, npr.org/intelligencesquared. I'm Robert Siegel with Intelligence Squared U.S. We'll now rejoin this debate, which was moderated by Bernard Weinraub, with another question from the audience.
The side against has distorted this entire debate by moving off the Hollywood has fueled anti-Americanism abroad issue to the war. We are not discussing the impact of the war. The war has its own impact. We all know that. But for you to deflect that into this main issue, I think is not really meeting the point of the debate. And therefore, by definition, you lose.
I quite disagree.
You're not arguing you're not arguing the point.
I don't think Richard Walter. What you say respectfully, we know there is a rise around the world in anti-American sentiment. We're arguing that it's not Hollywood fueling that. Aren't we allowed to say what we think just might have something to do with that? Can anybody doubt, if you read the papers, what it is that fuels this? These wrong-headed and disastrous policies that represent the opposite of the American ideal and the American tradition.
Yeah, but there was a lot of
Robert Greenwald.
If it was a court case and Hollywood was being tried as, you know, the guilty one for the crime, we're saying, no, we know who the guilty one for the crime is. We know what that guilty is, and it's the war. There's no question about it. I understand your point, and we could parse the words, what does fuel mean, how much fuel, but I actually think it's much more substantive to go to the real question, or the real question behind the question, from my point of view, maybe not yours, and say, here is why anti-American is being fueled abroad. We know the reason.
But I would assume that anti-Americanism is a new phenomenon. It's not.
But the numbers are... Do you doubt that the numbers are increasing?
I do.
Since the Iraq War?
James Herson.
Increasing numbers because you questioned whether we could debate the statistics.
Yes, and I've got
the Pew poll... okay, good. The Pew poll sampled 902 people in Great Britain, 412 of them were Muslim. 905 in France, 400 were Muslim. 902 in Germany, 413 are Muslim. It does not reflect the percentages of the populations in those countries. That poll is statistically invalid.
Let me get to it.
I want to get in on this, okay. Please.
Joshua Moravchik.
It is not a court case. This is not a crime in which there's one victim and one perpetrator. We're talking about attitudes in the world that involve hundreds of millions or billions of people, and there are many causative factors. And I don't know what it is about the word fueling that you don't understand, but the question here is whether Hollywood is one of those factors. And the very simple answer to your effort to put this all on Iraq is that there was a lot of anti-Americanism in the world before the war in Iraq. There was a lot of anti-Americanism in the world before Bush was elected president. The fact is that we're not going to be able to conduct ourselves in the world according to any policies without making some people angry, some people dislike us, and so on. The question that we're talking about tonight is whether the fare that Michael Moore and Oliver Stone and the other Hollywood opinion shapers are putting out to the world contributes to and compounds that.
Well, let me respond. First of all, you did see the sentence here. I know you did not intentionally leave it out, which is clearly marked, sample is weighed to be representative of the general population. So you're not just quoting the first. Let me finish.
But look at the percentages.
Okay, but it says that. You got the percentages from here, and it says, we know the percentages are too large, and like good statisticians did, we adjusted for it. But let me go back to the substantive point, because you're just wrong on that one. The substantive point is, I think, goes back to what Bernie said. Yes, Michael Moore has 3 best-selling books in Germany, but it doesn't compare to the Titanic, Star Wars, E.T., Pirates, and Lord of the Rings. It's not even close. And how do we make the case that those movies that are loved around the world, that are embraced around the world, that people fight to get in and see around the world, how do we say that is fueling anti-Americanism?
Nobody says that.
And
Robin Bronk.
No, Hollywood is not a factor. It is not a significant factor. Yes, there are many reasons. I mean, it could be the proliferation of trans fats across the world. There are many reasons, but Hollywood is not the most significant reason why anti-Americanism is growing around the world.
Let's get some questions. Yes, sir.
Hi. I have a question for James Herson. I should identify myself as Robert Siegel of NPR. I'll be actually hosting the radio broadcast of the debate. And my question is, in the schema between the heroic golden age of Hollywood and the modern cynical age that you've drawn, where would the movies of Frank Capra fit? That is, in It's a Wonderful Life, does the fact that a banker and real estate developer is clearly villainous and evil, even though we know in real life, in the decades since that time, he's been the more efficient actor in the economy who has prevailed over the sentimental profligate SNL, which is heroic. Was that a movie that fanned anti-Americanism at the time by presenting business in a negative light, or for that matter was Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, which made a great deal out of big-time corruption, a movie that fanned anti-Americanism, or are we more sensitive today than we were then to the images of us on the screen?
Okay, good question. I think it's the degree of specialization that Hollywood has had in villainizing and demonizing the representatives of free enterprise. And why do I even talk about free enterprise? Because America in the world represents the greatest experiment in free enterprise in the history of man. And part of the whole class warfare concept, really, is to make success something that you should feel guilty for. And you see this theme running through, and it becomes more prevalent when we have this series of movies where the plot line involves the evil corporation and the crusading worker or journalist or single mother with a push-up bra. It's the same pattern, but what it does is it takes away from a great part of this country, instead of something that could be told, which is sort of the entrepreneurial cowboys in this country, going back to the luminaries like Thomas Edison, to national treasures like Steve Jobs, who creates prosperity around the world through innovation that is fostered by a system that didn't happen by accident. I think that is a significant and more subtle point of anti-Americanism, though I say it's not exclusive to the period after the decline of the studio system in the 60s. But then again, Frank Capra also made films, a series of films called Why We Fight, that were made specifically during a time of war to bolster our side and demoralize their side. Instead, today, as we brought up with Syriana and other films of that ilk, films are being made to bolster their side.
To conclude, we'll hear excerpts of the debate's closing arguments. Speaking first against the motion, Hollywood has fueled anti-Americanism abroad, here's Richard Walter.
Which one of us you want to
Richard Walter.
Hollywood takes on corporations because it's David and Goliath. I have nothing against the corporations. I'm a free enterprise capitalist myself. And the reason these stories treat them the way they do is because it's the little guy versus the big guy. Nothing new about it at all. You know, American film is world film. Films made outside the United States, only 1 in 10 will be shown outside the country of its origin, but all American films are shown outside the country of their origin. Some, as you know, are shown only outside the country of their origin. That is to say, they can't win domestic distribution deals and instead are released on cable and direct to video. What can explain this? The answer is the quality of American film, and also, I believe, the diversity of American films, the immigrant heritage of the American nation and of the American film business in particular. When you look at American films, you're looking at the world because you're seeing people of every race, of every persuasion. American films are the single biggest export in the nation. They contribute more affirmatively to the reduction of the unfavorable balance of trade. They are a blessing upon us and should be celebrated by people who really love this country, who really consider them to be patriotic, rather than constantly besmirching them and kvetching about them.
Thank you. Okay, for Roger Kimball.
It pains me to observe that the speakers against this motion tonight seem to be unable to appreciate that the motion does not say that Hollywood causes anti-Americanism. It is not a referendum on the Bush administration or the war in Iraq. It simply says that Hollywood fuels anti-Americanism abroad. It seems to me that my team has supplied numerous examples of how this happens. One of the people on the opposing side remarked on the remarkable outpouring of sympathy for the United States in the immediate aftermath of 9/11, and then its quick evaporation. I would say that that outpouring of sympathy was basically a version of sentimentality lavished upon the United States in its unusual posture as victim. As soon as the United States began standing up for itself, that sympathy vanished. And I think that that tells us a lot about the world opinion and how we can depend upon it. But in terms of Hollywood, which is really a mindset, as James Hearson said, it's not just the movies. It's really we're talking about a way of looking at the world, pop culture in general. I think this is a mindset that has given up on America in many ways, given up on those traditional virtues. James mentioned free enterprise, but there are many other things, individual liberty, belief in the future, really.
Roger.
Then I will finish then. I'll stop.
Okay. Against Robin?
I guess the only thing I can say is that if American movies bred anti-American sentiment, I'm not sure why Iran and North Korea don't have compulsory Sunday matinees.
Okay, for Joshua Marofchik.
In her earlier remarks, Robin said that there's no scientific proof, no reliable study that Hollywood is responsible for encouraging anti-Americanism. That is absolutely true. There is also no reliable study, no proof that any other factor whatsoever causes anti-Americanism. We have this phenomenon of anti-Americanism. There are many things that contribute to it, and we don't have any science of anti-Americanism to tell us exactly which. I think common sense tells us that the kind of work of someone like Michael Moore, which is so tremendously popular in Europe, contributes to that. And when we have Robert talk about that halcyon moment after 9/11 when the world all loved us, that moment was symbolized by a headline in Le Monde, which translated said, "We are all Americans now." And that was repeated here many times. However, if you get Le Monde and read the essay was brimming with anti-Americanism, saying, you know, this attack is a terrible thing, but it's what the Americans deserved for the way they attempt to dominate the world. And as for the likes of Oliver Stone, I'd just like to share with you an anecdote. Last year, I had the opportunity to attend a conference in Ramallah, I was one of only two Americans there. It was hundreds of Palestinians talking among themselves. And one, Hani El-Hassan, who had been a member of Arafat's cabinet, gave the sort of keynote address of a history of the Arab-Israel conflict. And he said, in the early 1960s, President Nasser wanted to end the conflict with Israel, so he sent a letter to President Kennedy telling him how that could be done. President Kennedy sent him back a letter saying, yes, I agree, and this was all about to be consummated when the Zionists assassinated Kennedy. And I sat there stunned in my seat, but how would I explain to young Palestinians who have seen the likes of Oliver Stone's paranoid fantasies about what happened to Kennedy that Hani El-Hassan's is just implausible?
Thanks very much. Against Robert Greenwald.
Well, it's slightly off subject, but I want to know why Josh was one of only two Americans at this conference. Now I am scared for our country and the impression they get, and have somebody over there who advocated for the war and wants us to bomb Iran. But going back to the primary subject, let's not confuse bad movies or even critical movies. The assumption here is if it's a movie critical of something in the United States, therefore that will fuel anti-Americanism. Not true, not accurate. Common sense can tell us that. Many people all over the world and many people here have seen movies that are critical. That does not turn you into anti-American. And I would argue that the movies, the popular movies, the ones that are being seen in overwhelming numbers, Titanic, Star Wars, E.T., that's building tremendous goodwill, which would far negate, and therefore there would be no fuel for the couple of incidents which might possibly on a given day encourage somebody to be against us. Thank you.
And for James Hurson.
Yeah, I mentioned, you know, I live close to Los Angeles, and I love Hollywood, but I love America more. And I'll tell you, Richard Dreyfuss, who used to speak differently about America until he went on the campaign to teach civics and he read some himself, has called this country a miracle. And the innovations and advancements that we've had here were because of a system that for the very first time, rights and powers were viewed as implanted in individuals. And some of those were transferred pursuant to a social contract we call the Constitution to a government. That had never happened before. This motion is about free speech. And to address an audience member who asked about responsibility today, the responsibility is greater for two reasons. One is because of what Thomas Friedman calls the flat earth, because Hollywood exports more instantly. And two is because of the greater war. We were attacked in this city. It was the greatest attack on continental soil in our history. The greater war continues. Even many of those who oppose the war in Iraq are still cognizant of the fact that there is a war on terror. The reason I had asked you to vote for the motion was simply to raise awareness that this output of pop culture coming out of Hollywood matters. And it's not only for our domestic consumption. It's being consumed by the world, and it shapes the way they view us. And Hollywood ought to use its power to help America prosper. I mean, in that way, in the world's eyes, they'd be a winner.
And that concludes our debate. The audience was polled a second time at the end of the evening on the resolution, Hollywood has fueled anti-Americanism abroad. And for the first time in the brief history of IQ Squared US, the debate swayed the audience. The results were 35% for the motion, down from 40%, and a whopping 59% against, which was up a considerable amount from 35%. 6% didn't know. You can hear this program and other debates in the Intelligence Squared series at npr.org/intelligencesquared. The Intelligence Squared U.S. Debate Series is an initiative of the Rosenkranz Foundation, Chairman Robert Rosenkranz, Executive Producer Dana Wolf. For more information about this series, or to find out how you can get tickets to attend future live events, visit www.intelligencesquared.org. www.iq2us.org. That's www.iq2us.org. The goal of Intelligence Squared U.S. is to raise the level of public discourse in American life and to recognize that on most contentious issues, both sides have intellectually respectable views. This series is produced for radio by WNYC, New York Public Radio. Producer, Rob Christensen. Senior producer, Ellen Horn. The recording was engineered by Edward Haber, Damon Whittemore, and Marlon Barry. Intelligence Squared U.S. is distributed by NPR. National Public Radio.